Accession number 28735, Reel 4.
Regiment Reel 4. What was the next move then once you'd finished that period of ground training? At
home on leave for a short time. And then report to Elmdon, which is the aerodrome for Birmingham. Now the National Exhibition Centre, of course. We arrive at Elmdon, probably given them just a railway voucher, and the lorry picked you up at the station and took you to quarters, Elementary Flying Training School, EFTS, Tiger Moss. We were not the only... it was not the only aircraft on that field at that time, because oddly enough there was a big four-engine bomber called a Stirling being built at that time, and there was one runway on at Elmdon only, which we never were to use. That was for the Stirlings, and they were not a squadron of them, they were individual aircraft that were being novated, put back together, mended and brought up to scratch and so on. Partially damaged aircraft, I guess, which were made flyable. And then they had to sort of take off and do test flights, and then another one would come in on the back of a lorry and same thing would happen to them. So we saw the Stirlings, but never flew them, of course. And we climb into a Tiger Moth, which has two cockpits, pupil sits in front, instructor behind him. We are given flying kit, because it's cold up there, or can be, because you're open cockpit. So you have an Irving suit, which is a thick drill suit with a big zip fastener going from here to there. And you would think, we saw, oh, lovely pair of brown flying boots, woolly lined things with zip fastener up there. No, we weren't given those. Put your plimsolls on. Plimsolls? Fly an aeroplane? Oh, well, do as you're told, put your plimsolls on. Why? Because you need to get sensitivity of feel on the rudder bar. Through a great big thick soled boot, you wouldn't feel the slightest movement that you need to get to correct your course and so on. So plimsolls it was. Now, I had a sister, as I told you earlier, although she was a devoted Christian, she was somewhat superstitious at the same time. I don't know how you can be that. However, let's not worry about that too much. Fact was, she said to me one day before I started flying, now look, Eric, this is my lucky halfpenny. I want you to put this in your pocket and carry this every time you fly. Oh, right, oh, Madge, I said, I'll do that now. So when I put my living suit on, I put this in the top pocket, my lucky halfpenny, and did my plimsoll up tightly and put my helmet on and my goggles and climbed into the front cockpit of a Tiger Moth. And a flying officer, RAF, who'd been on two or three tours and was having a rest teaching other chaps how to fly, and said, right, I'll take off the first time. When we land, you can do the second takeoff. Just watch what we do. And he called out as he was doing it, right, open the throttle gently, look either side of you, make sure there's nothing in the way, open the throttle hard to full throttle, stick slightly forward, that will just lift your tail, and say you're running along on two wheels, and look at your speed, airspeed indicator. When your speed gets to 60 or whatever it is, stick back slightly, keep straight, keep level, wings level, and take off. So we take off and we go up, and we're flying around somewhere near Birmingham, and he says, "You've got her?" I said, "I've got her, sir." I take the stick and the bar. He said, "Right, keep straight and level." "Aye, aye, sir," says I. "Come on," he said, "pick that wing up." I looked down, my right wing had just dropped down 3 degrees. "Pick that wing up." So I went like that and looked. In fact, he turned the plane over. "Gently, gently, gently. It's terribly sensitive. You could do it with a finger, you know, gently, gently." That's what people don't appreciate about flying that sort of aircraft in those days. Well, the same would apply for flying a Tiger Moth these days, but this is why a lot of jet pilots these days have a Tiger Moth as their favourite hobby, pastime, because it's such a pleasant machine to fly if you treat it well. It's sensitive to a degree that I doubt whether any other aircraft, certainly British, ever achieved. So you could really almost fingertip lead it. All the controls were equally sensitive, and therefore, of course, a marvellous plane for aerobatics.
Could you give me a thumbnail sketch of what it looked like as an aircraft?
What it looked like? It had an inline engine, a Gypsy Major, I think, in the front, petrol. A slightly pointed nose, a double-bladed prop, fuselage went back into a curved tail fin and rudder. It was a biplane, that is to say the lower wing was level with the bottom of the fuselage and went out sideways, and then on struts and between the two wings, the upper wing was up above you, above your head. In fact, the main petrol tank was up right in front of your head. And that's because, of course, it was gravity fed to the engine, you see. So as long as you weren't upside down, you could fly. you can't fly a Tiger Moth upside down for very long. Because, of course, it won't flow. But apart from that, I don't know as much to say. What I did notice, two things, in fact. One was an experience, the other one was a happening. The first one, the experience, is that you have this, you're strapped in, of course. Because if you turn upside down and you weren't strapped in, you'd fall out. So you have a Sutton harness, as it's called. There's four straps that come up, two above your shoulders and two up from either side of your thighs, and they come together and you put a clip through and so on, and you can tighten them. And so you're supposed to make it as tight as possible. And, you know, you could tighten them as much as you possibly could. And then you take up in the airplane and turn upside down and you would hang off your straps. You come off your seat and you wouldn't believe that that was possible. And the other thing that happened because of that was that we were flying over Tamworth, which is just 10 or 12, 15 miles away from Elmden, on one occasion. It was the first occasion, actually, that the instructor said, "Right, I'm now going to invert the aircraft," and he turned over nice and slowly, and we were upside down. Now two things happened. I noticed that the propeller stopped revolving pretty much and so on, because he turned the petrol off, of course. My lucky halfpenny shot out of my pocket and fell to some lucky person down in Tamworth. And never to this day did I dare tell my sister what that had happened. She always thought I flew with it. Most unfortunate, but then life can be like that, you know, sometimes.
What did the cockpit look like? Was it a simple affair or was it complex?
Relatively simple. A bit like the dashboard of a car. in a sense, you've got this little vertical bores, slightly round at the top because that's the shape of the fuselage, and a straight line. It's about a foot, maybe a foot deep, no, not as much as that. And you've got about the same number of dials on it as you've got on the dashboard of a car. Maybe one or two more, but not many. Really, it's just the controls and the instruments that tell you how high you are, how fast you're going, compass in what direction you're going, and whether you have any skid, sideways movement, and so on. So you need that information, because if you're flying at night, if you're in fog for that matter, or in clouds, and you can't see a horizon, if you cannot see a horizon, then you have to believe the artificial one, which is this little end of an aircraft above or below the line. If it's above the line, you're climbing. If it's below it, if it's tilted one way, then you're banked, and so on. And one of the things you had better learn, and we had to learn this, not so much there, we did learn this at Elmden, is that you cannot believe your senses. You would think, if you shut your eyes, you can feel when you turn left or turn right, when up or down. Your senses tell you this, but they can be wrong. Your instruments are never wrong, pretty well. So there comes to a point where you've done enough flying with the Tiger Moth, and the instructor has shown you how to put an aircraft into a spin. That is to say, if you were to fly that aircraft with its nose up and pull the throttle back, so you're losing speed, you get to what is called stalling speed. And that is, after which you are too slow, the movement of air over the wings is too slow to give you the lift you need. And different aircraft behave differently when they stall. Biplanes, because they have four, as it were, wings as such, if you can think of a wing as being two arms, as it were, the biplane has a very well-behaved stall. It doesn't really drop either wing, it just drops its nose. So you're like this, and then suddenly you're in a diving position. If you were to put on a little bit of rudder as that happened, then you would start to spin right or left, as the case may be. You can tell, of course, if your eyes are open, which way you are spinning. But if your eyes were closed, or if it were at night and you were doing it, you wouldn't necessarily know for certain which way you were spinning, except that your little ball of instrument would tell you you're going left or right. And it is perfectly possible to think my senses tell me I'm turning right, and yet you are actually turning left, spinning to the left rather than to the right. You have to learn to do and behave what the instrument says, not what you think. It used to be called flying with your backside. That's how the early pilots put it. But that can be very misleading and lead to fatalities under certain conditions, you see. So, apart from that, the cockpit had very little in it. You had the rudder bar, this stick, a bit like a bicycle pump, really. Nothing on it, because you had no guns or bombs or torpedoes or anything like that. Plain stick, control column is its proper name. And you had a throttle, which was just a little handle, not much bigger than my thumb, but which you just move forward. It was hinged at the bottom on a little sort of segment of framing, and that just increased your speed or decreased it. No. no brakes. So, very elementary plane indeed.
What colour was it? Did it have any markings?
Do you know, I can't remember. I think it was just a grey, greyish brown. I don't think it had camouflage markings. Certainly had an RAF roundel on the side, but it wasn't until we went on to the second stage, the secondary flying course, which in my case, I say, was in Canada, that we flew yellow aeroplanes, which are normally internationally accepted now is the training colour. But the Saigonmas weren't yellow, I'm pretty certain.
You mentioned you'd done that first kind of familiarisation flight with your instructor.
Yes.
With the pattern instruction, how did it go on from, say, the second flight? What were the sort of things you'd be learning or being allowed to do?
Oh, well, of course, what he's got to do is to tell you as soon as possible, and for you to learn as soon as possible, the elementary movements that have to be made to take off, turn left, or right, but usually left, turn left, fly level, turn left again, so you're coming back down the runway, as it were, the opposite direction, turn left again, look around, check your height, turn left again, and learn to land, to get the speed right for the landing, the position right, into the wind if possible, but that didn't necessarily make a lot of difference. So they used to fly a windsock on most aerodromes, probably don't bother now, but for light aircraft the wind could make a difference if it gets up to above 20 knots, and yes, landing, you think you're going that way, but you're actually careering sideways depending on the strength of the wind that's blowing you.
How would you control the aircraft? You mentioned a little bit with the rudders and the control column, but how do they work together to control an aircraft?
Well, I mean, you have three possible movements, don't you? You can nose down or nose up, and that can be controlled by your elevator. So you pull the stick back to lift the nose, you push it forward to dive. Right, you can turn the plane laterally, lift one wing, which would be called banking, left or right, by putting the stick from side to side. It's very slightly, you just slight bank if you're going to do a gentle turn. If under combat conditions, when you eventually get to it, of course, you put it over quickly, and as quickly as you dare. More of that later. And the rudder bar, of course, is a question of left or right on the tail fin, which will make the nose point left or point right. So you have three directions of possible movement, and one, the stick controls two of them, and the rudder bar provides the other one. So gently working those two objects in those three possible ways is the way you fly. The alteration in the flight course of any aircraft.
So with a Tiger Moth, how would you keep it in very simple, straight and level flight?
You do it, to start with, by instant preparedness for it to do something wrong, i.e. for a wing to drop slightly, or your nose to come above the horizon, or any slight difference in your procedure once you have got it straight and level. Any deviation from that straightness or the levelness is what you have your controls for. And so you learn to, just like driving a car, how do you turn a corner? You turn the wheel, yes, but how much do you turn the wheel? It's a question of how slowly you're going. It's a question of how steep the corner is. Sometimes a lot, sometimes a little. Mostly a little. Very sensitive aircraft.
Is that a difficult thing to get used to at first, how sensitive the aircraft might be?
The answer is not difficult at all for a good pilot. There were some fellows who couldn't do it. And if you are inept, you see, if your coordination is not top class, then you will not achieve a good test when the time comes. And so when you have been, when you've done a number of takeoffs with the instructor, and you've done them, and he's satisfied with them, and you know how to turn them, when you've done a number of landings with them, and he's satisfied that you know how to land, he takes you up and you do a circuit and he comes back and then he climbs out and he says, all yours, son, off you go.
Can we take some of those
your first solo?
Can we take some of those things through in kind of the kind of order you mentioned it, about how you take off in a Tiger Moth, what you have to do in a biplane to take it off, what do you have to look for, how do you position the aircraft, how does it get into the air?
The engine has been started by somebody spinning the propeller. They turn it a few times first when you've got the ignition off, switches off, as they say, and the mechanic will turn this. This is to get the cylinders a certain amount of petrol in each one as he turns it by hand. And then he says, switches on, and you turn on the ignition switch. This time he puts two hands on the prop and goes boom like that, and it spins it round, and with any luck the engine catches and fires and it starts turning. But it's only at quarter throttle. The little throttle only moves quarter of an inch, half an inch maybe, in its 4 or 5 inch run. So you're ticking over, and you look around, you tighten your straps, you check that there are no objects in your way, no other aircraft coming in to land behind you, or so on, and you open the throttle gradually, up to halfway, a little more maybe, and slight forward pressure on the stick just to lift the tail up, so you're running along with your wheels on the ground but not the tail. You're running with the fuselage horizontal. Then up to full throttle and so on, and then look at your airspeed. I can't remember what the actual takeoff speed for the Tiger Moth is. I would think it's probably between 55 and 60, something of that sort. So you glance at that and you see the grass rushing past you and so on, you learn what it looks like at takeoff. The rate of the grass going past you is a clue to what speed you're doing. Consequently, when you've got to your takeoff speed, ease back on the stick very slightly, and with any luck your wheels will come off the ground. And you continue to do so, and you give it a little bit more pressure just to make sure that you're climbing now only at about probably five degrees, but you're off the ground. In the meantime, of course, you've got to keep your wings level and your rudder bar straight. There must be no sideways movement, and must be no yaw. Just that the nose position is the important one, because you're taking off and not diving.
What about making a turn?
Yes, turn is easy, but you again, having done one or two with the instructor, you turn with a slight use of both the stick and the rudder bar. Now, if you want to turn left, therefore, you push the left foot. The rudder bar is one bar In some cases, actually, on a more advanced aircraft, they're different pedals, but I mean, the operation is the same. If you push the left, the nose will swing left. But you need, because you don't want to skid against the air, you need to bank at the same time, very slightly. So slight left with the stick and slightly left on the rudder bar, and you will gently turn left. The rate of turn, normally, I think there were four rates. Rate one is the slowest. So slight pressure on both would give you a slow left-hand turn. It probably would take you 6 or 7 seconds before you turn through 90 degrees. Rate two is obviously faster, a bit further forward, more stick, and the rate three, possibly rate four, is the steep turn, as we call it, yeah, as fast as possible. And you learn to do that because of combat, of course. Or some emergency happening when you're up there. So the rate of turn is important, but you have got to watch speed, because turning the aircraft means its speed will drop normally. So you need a bit of extra speed if you're turning, especially if you're turning a steep turn. Otherwise, the nose will come down and you won't be very happy now.
And what about the approach to landing and landing the aircraft? How would you do that?
Well, it's the reverse of what I've said just now, but you're coming in on a crosswind leg. You're flying east, as it were, and you want to fly north to land on the grass, so you have a 90 degree turn to make, and you need to be at a certain height above the ground. That would depend on where the aerodrome was, what shape it was, whether it had any boundaries, trees, fences or anything of that sort that you had to get over before you touched down. But assuming no object in the way, then I think you would just check your speed to make sure you were above stalling speed, but not much. Five knots above would be fine. You can land fast, but it's not a good idea. No? So generally speaking, you would want to land at a medium flying speed, just safely above stalling speed, but not more than that, because of course you never know when you're about to touch down whether anything might get in the way. If you're going too fast, then you've lost control. So the slower the plane's going, the more control you have, provided you're not stalling. And therefore, having turned, completed your turn and lined up with your runway or the apparent position on grass that you want to land, you pull the throttle back slightly with the nose slightly down, come down until you reckon you're something, and you have to learn. What does the grass look like at 5 feet? What does it look like at 10 feet between the wheels and the ground, you see? And when you're down to about the height of this table, 4 or 5 feet above, you reckon your wheels are down there. You are sitting up where this ceiling is, 10 feet above the ground maybe. You are about to touch down, but you don't want to touch down on your main undercarriage only. You want to be in the three-point position. So you lower the throttle slightly and ease back on the stick slightly. So that just as you're coming in there, like this, your nose down, you're coming down like that, you level out, and then tail down slightly and touch down, and with all three at the same time, three-point landing, if you can do it. And it's when you've done that for the first time, that's called your first solo. And that usually takes you about 8 to 8.5 hours.